Queen Elizabeth II has died. Her son, Charles, has just released a statement that says, quote, "The death of my beloved mother, Her Majesty the Queen, is a moment of the greatest sadness for me and all members of my family." Charles is now king. Joining us now is Adila Solomon, London correspondent for our partners at the Washington Post. Adila, welcome.
Hi there.
Buckingham Palace announced this afternoon that the Queen died peacefully in her sleep at the age of 96. Tributes are pouring in from around the world. There's a crowd gathering at Buckingham Palace. It is growing. What are some of the words and images that stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a real sense of shock across the nation. I mean, we were alerted to the fact that the Queen was unwell earlier this afternoon. She cancelled an appointment yesterday, so people were kind of concerned. But as you say, the fact that now she's finally gone, and for many people in Britain, you know, they've grown up only knowing her as the monarch. So it's a massive, profound shock to the nation.
And just 2 days ago, she met with Liz Truss, the 15th prime minister to serve under Queen Elizabeth. She was really a figure of tremendous continuity for so many people. Tell us more about that.
Exactly, yeah. So many people are silently relieved, I think, that she was able to hang on to oversee this transition of government power from Boris Johnson, who, as you may know, was ousted by his own party and replaced by Liz Truss just on Tuesday. And the palace released an official image of the Queen meeting Liz Truss in her house in Scotland, in Balmoral, where she eventually died. And people commented that even though she looked frail and old, she did look relatively well and was standing up and greeting Liz Truss. So, yeah, I think people are relieved that she was able to do that last duty to the nation. And as you said, to see her 15th prime minister. She's also seen 13 U.S. presidents through the White House. So, yeah, she's been a real mainstay of public life here in the U.K.
For 70 years, and she came to the throne in her 20s. Some are already calling her Britain's greatest monarch. How do you think her reign will be remembered?
I mean, just as you say, it's so varied over 70 years. I mean, she's seen, you know, people land on the moon. She's seen the advent of the internet. She's seen such massive social changes since the war. So it's very hard to pin down just one part of her reign. But I would also say that ultimately they're still a family. And I think that's what really has gripped people around the world, is that even though they perform these very public duties, people are still very interested in the daily familial life of the Queen and her children and grandchildren. So I think that's really what she'll be remembered for, is opening up the monarchy to the public.
And just briefly, what does happen next? I said before introducing you that Charles is now the king.
Yes, it's very surreal. People are chanting, "Long live the king," and it's the first time we've heard that. You know, for over 70 years, he's issued a statement saying that he's in a period of, quote, mourning and change, and things are going to be obviously moving quite quickly. So he and Camilla, who will be known as the Queen Consort, are traveling back to London tomorrow. And he's also just announced that he will be known as King Charles III. So that will be his official title going forwards.
All right. And we will keep a very close eye on this. Many details to come. Adila Solomon, a London correspondent for The Washington Post. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As we continue to reflect on the death of Queen Elizabeth II, the impressive length of her reign and the impact she had on British culture during her time, the Queen was a consistent presence for 70 years, the world's longest reigning monarch. Edward Luce is an editor and columnist for the Financial Times and joins us now. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you.
So we're talking about someone who went all the way from Model Ts to Teslas. In terms of what has changed during her reign, she took over from her father, who died when he was only 56. She was just 25. Can you give us an idea of the state of the country at that point, the what she inherited?
Yeah, I mean, it does, even though it's only 70 years ago, in some respects it, you know, feels like a couple of centuries ago, because it was such a different country, almost an exclusively white one. A country that was still suffering the sort of, or laboring under the sort of wartime rationing system that went on for years and years after the Second World War, and one in which convention, tradition, deference, and hierarchy were still very much in place. So she came to the throne. She was coronated in 1953, but she came to the throne when her father died in 1952. And immediately, hard though it is to imagine now, was seen as a sort of symbol of modernity and of the future and of change, partly because she was 25, but partly because she was, by royal standards, quite a person of the people. She had been a mechanic during the war when she was very young, but she did a day job during the war and war fatigues, army fatigues. She drove a Land Rover. She'd sort of mixed and, I guess, got accustomed to dealing with, quotation marks, ordinary people. And when she was coronated, she broke tradition by saying it should be televised, which caused horror to the sort of elder traditionalists in the palace and elsewhere. Letting daylight in on the magic was something that should never happen. The monarchy should be wrapped in mystique and never transparent. And she didn't believe that. She let daylight in on the magic, as it were, literally, by allowing television cameras in. So she was seen as a symbol of change.
She has served during some of not just the biggest moments in the history of the UK, including the troubles in Northern Ireland, and of course she made that historic visit there, but also throughout the world. I mean, it's only been since the 1970s and 80s that colonization was really coming to an end. That's when about 20 countries gained independence from Britain. How involved was she in these kind of political maneuvers, and how seriously did she take her role?
Well, she was, so I suppose the largest part of the British Empire got independence in 1947, India and Pakistan, with the partition. That was the year she married Prince Philip. She wasn't yet on the throne. And then during the 50s, the so-called winds of change that one of her prime ministers, her third prime minister, Harold Macmillan, talked about occurred, you know, across most of the rest of the empire. You know, there were small bits that were left over to the 70s and the 80s, and most prominently, I guess, Hong Kong until 1997. But very, very early in her reign, the idea of the Commonwealth, which is Britain and its former colonies, took over. And she was very strongly committed to the Commonwealth as the head of the Commonwealth, and was amongst leaders in Africa, leaders in Asia, leaders, some of whom were Marxist, some of whom were, you know, strong sort of nationalist, post-colonial leaders, all liked her personally because she wanted to go out of her way to make it seem like a family of equals. And very famously, she clashed with Margaret Thatcher, who didn't want, as prime minister in the 1980s, who didn't want to impose sanctions on apartheid South Africa. And that could have led to essentially the end of the Commonwealth, because almost every other member was strongly in favor of sanctions. And the Queen came out, very unusually for her, because she doesn't normally take and isn't supposed to take political stances, came out strongly in favor of sanctions on apartheid South Africa. I guess both because she found the system abhorrent, but also because it was necessary to keep the Commonwealth together.
I hate to do this to you in just a minute left, but what might her legacy be over 70 years? That's a lot of things to touch upon. What made me look back on Queen Elizabeth II as her legacy?
Well, we started out discussing how she was seen as a change and as a symbol of modernism in 1952, but by now she's very much a symbol of stability and continuity. And of course, that continuity has come to an end today with her death. I suspect, because Charles, now Charles III, her son, is a less popular figure and is associated a lot in the public mind with the Princess Diana saga, that we're going to have a renewed debate about the role of the monarchy. Yeah. And there's going to be a great deal of nostalgia for Queen Elizabeth. She was an extraordinary figure.
Edward Luce is editor and columnist for the Financial Times. Thank you.
Thank you.